things. And one of the things that has also emerged through the residency has been that tension between rationality and irrationality, between being scientific about where you look at a subject mm-hmm. and being non-scientific, yeah. if that's the best way to describe yeah, yeah. it. And what's been a challenge, actually, for the people that have participated with you, has been the way that you've treated both ends of that apparent spectrum evenly.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that the idea of reading land is the thing that keeps kind of cropping up in my mind. It keeps becoming the clearest analysis of what it is that I'm trying to do. And that can be interpreted in so many ways. And so many people think that their way of reading the land is a really valid or as valid as something more scientific. That can include kind of from the most, literally the most cutting edge sort of technology and the ways that we have now available to us to read land in, so kind of radars or filming or kind of GPS, right back down to someone like Joseph Ford, who was able to read the contours of the land, which is so sort of slight and so precise through manual kind of levels reading and manual survey, right to people who are able to kind of feel they are aware of fields of energy through ley lines and magnetic forces in the earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so easy. I had an interesting conversation with the geologist I went to see recently to say that ley lines are kind of hocus pocus, but actually, you know, he said, you know, people are very easy happy to accept having a bit of quartz rock in their watch that will kind of generate some kind of power or energy, and yet they're not prepared to believe, you know, that there's these fields of energy going running through the ground.
I think that within the museum has been an aspect of the residency that's been really fruitful, because obviously we have bodies of volunteers whose business it is to document and order and record all of the pieces of historical data that we collect, be that objects or archival material or even something like folklore. Mm. And I thought that was an interesting avenue to explore with one of our volunteers, yeah. where you went on a kind of folklore walk of that same space.
No, absolutely. There's no way that would have happened had I not had the time in the gallery as I have had, because it's something that completely didn't occur to me at the beginning of the residency. And that's why it's been such an interesting and kind of collaborative project in many respects, really. John Paul took me on a walk where he would tell me lots of stories and about kind of folklore and characters on the moor, and wasn't sure whether they were true or not. And there were two things that struck me as really interesting about that. Firstly, that this is a folk museum and there are these threads of information and stories that are interpreted in different ways all the time. And just in the nature of it being a folk museum, it's appropriate to be interpreting these stories in kind of current media as well as maintaining kind of older medias. But also just that there are people here who, you know, there's the primary source of the information or the object that gets donated to the museum. And then the person who sort of created that is obviously really important. But then just as important are the people who are prepared to log and document and maintain and preserve those things. And it kind of ends up being these sort of lines of folklore and wanting to preserve things that are intangible but kind of as present as something like a gradient in a funny sort of way. They're kind of the lines of energy and information are absolutely kind of, you know, buzzing around the place. And I thought that was really interesting.